This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. You've probably hummed along to some of his many tunes. Today, remembering a Mountain State Hall of Fame songwriter.
He also had the ability to write these songs, like, you know, Red Wing Blackbird, which, like, they communicate so much about a way of life.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. The Senate passed a bill Monday that could reduce personal income taxes by 2%. In his original call to bring the state legislature into session, the governor proposed a 5% tax cut. After that bill stalled in both chambers, he proposed a 2% income tax cut. The Senate passed that 2% cut unanimously. It would cost the state an estimated $44 million, far less than the estimated $130 million that 5% cut would have cost. Also in the special session, the House Monday approved a one-time payment towards a public employees insurance agency reserve fund. Keelan Bailey has more from the Capitol.
Both chambers have now passed a bill to restore $87 million into PEIA reserve funds. After unanticipated health care plan costs this year, PEIA is short on a required reserve fund. The deficit comes after PEIA has a projected $80 million in planned expense losses. PEIA spent more on covering those in the state health care program than planned. Recent PEIA premium increases went into effect in July. PEIA does still plan to raise premiums in the next fiscal year, citing rising health care costs nationally. The organization's board will meet tomorrow at 1 p.m. to discuss specific cost-cutting measures. PEIA covers about 13% of the state, including many legislators and other state employees like those at WVPB. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Keelan Bailey in Charleston.
Record keeping might sound dull, but it's an important part of maintaining a sense of culture and place. As Chris Schultz reports, a recent visit from federal record keeper to West Virginia emphasized the importance of records in maintaining our democracy.
On the sixth floor of the downtown library on West Virginia University's Morgantown campus, the West Virginia and Regional History Center preserves and provides access to the records that document history and culture in the Mountain State. There are books, of course, but also photographs, newspapers, and genealogies. Lori Hostetler is the director of the West Virginia and Regional History Center at WVU Libraries.
The records that we have hold the stories of the people of West Virginia. They reflect the people that live here. And through access and preserving those, they really help us to examine the past so that we can be proactive in the present and plan for the future.
She says the records cover all aspects of history and culture in the state, and that for every national event that is taught in history classes, West Virginians participated.
Something that I say to folks a lot of the times is that there's really no national history without local history.
Which is why Hostetler says it was an honor to have Colleen Shogan, the Archivist of the United States, visit WVU's campus last week. Shogan has many personal connections to the state, including several family members who are WVU alumni. But she came to view the university's extensive collections, as well as to meet with students and give a public talk. She said WVU is an example of the National Archives' more than 13 billion physical records not being restricted to a few buildings in Washington, D.C.
But the records are really the property of the American people. So my job is to figure out ways in which we can provide as much access as possible of those records to as many Americans as want to see them and want to interact with them.
The archivist is the head and chief administrator of the National Archives and Records Administration. Although Shogan is the 11th person to hold the position, she is the first woman to do so.
In some ways, I kind of wonder, what took so long? I don't know. I mean, I'm glad to be that I'm the first woman. No, I mean, I'm happy I'm here for sure, and I'm very honored by it. But it's almost kind of crazy to me that it took so long.
Analysis from the AFL-CIO and the Society of American Archivists shows that women represent more than 80% of librarians and more than 70% of archivists in the United States.
And when I travel around, I see that demographic of leadership is changing. And that's really heartening to me, because that matters when you have people that are working in this field and they can see that there's a pathway for advancement.
Shogun plans to display the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which recognizes a woman's right to vote, in the National Archives Rotunda, alongside other founding documents such as the Constitution and Bill of Rights. A big focus of her talk at WVU was on the importance of archives and records to the nation's democracy. She said the National Archives exists so that all Americans have access to understanding something about our past.
But we also like to say at the National Archives, we do it to preserve democracy, because records provide accountability and they provide transparency about decisions that have been made by federal agencies, by your government, by presidents, by members of Congress, by Supreme Court justices or judges. Those are all records. And without accountability, without transparency, we cannot have a strong democracy. That is a fundamental component, a key component of any democracy.
After the talk, Shogun told West Virginia Public Broadcasting that in an increasingly polarized country, access not only to archives and records, but also to public servants, is crucial to combat misinformation and distrust.
If you're going to be a public servant, you can't just be in the corner and not be willing to interact with the public, answer questions from the media. And we also take a lot of pride at the National Archives doing our work in a nonpartisan fashion. Our goal is to share the records with as many Americans as possible and then allow Americans to make their own judgments and their own choices and decisions based upon those records.
That message of access resonated with political science graduate student Chloe Hernandez, who says she is now motivated to look up her father's military records.
Definitely that more students should take time to look at the National Archives, not in like the sense of like, oh, it's a school field trip, but more so just like learning about our history and like specific history for each person.
The National Archives are gearing up for the country's 250th anniversary in 2026. That includes more travel around the country by Shogun, and more importantly, more access to the nation's founding documents for all Americans. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Chris Schultz in Morgantown.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:51. Areas of fog this morning, becoming mostly sunny today. Highs in the 60s and low 70s. Clear tonight, lows in the 30s and 40s. Sunshine tomorrow with highs in the 60s and low 70s. Support for WVPB is provided by Solar Holler, bringing clean energy to families across West Virginia. More at solarholler.com. West Virginia Music Hall of Famer Billy Ed Wheeler died last month at age 91. The Boone County native was a singer, author, and a playwright, but was best known for writing songs like Jackson, which won a Grammy for Johnny and June Carter Cash, Coward of the County, a hit for Kenny Rogers, and It's Midnight, which was recorded by Elvis Presley. There were many others. Mountain Stage co-creator Larry Gross was a friend and fan of Wheeler's. Bill Lynch talked to Gross about Wheeler's legacy and getting to know him.
Easy question. When did you meet Billy Ed?
Well, let me tell you when I first heard of Billy Ed, and then I'll get to the part when I first met Billy Ed. When I was a teenager and I was starting to listen to music and play music, and I listened to a lot of country folk, traditional folk, and pop folk, things like the Kingston Trio, but, you know, Johnny Cash. And I heard some songs I really liked, and they had something that in common, but I didn't know what it was. And as a kid, I looked up the who wrote it, and it was Billy Ed Wheeler. And it stuck in my mind because it's two D's, Billy Ed, E-D-D. And as a kid, I thought, I don't know anything about Billy Ed Wheeler, you know? But I thought, must be a good songwriter, because he wrote Desert Pete for the Kingston Trio, and Reverend Mr. Black, the Kingston Trio, and Johnny Cash both sang that song. And Judy Collins sang Red Wing Blackbird, and which I really liked that song a whole lot. But I knew nothing about West Virginia coal mining or anything else. And a lot of that, you know, like Red Wing Blackbird, that's what it's about. So let's fast forward. And after I start singing and make some albums, and I come to West Virginia from Los Angeles, and I'm on a program for the National Endowment for the Arts, and they gave us money to bring some people in as guests. And I was up in Barbara Tucker in Randolph County. So I paid for Billy Ed Wheeler to come from Nashville to sing in the gym of Tucker County High School with a tiny PA. And it was a big deal because I had heard all these songs for years. And of course, he had many others that I began to find out about. So that's the first time I met him. He was a character. As a matter of fact, he told me he wanted me to go get some Boone's Farm for him in his room, in his hotel room, which I did. I went to the 7-Eleven or whatever it was, the Go-Mart, and got him some Boone's Farm. But I got to know him more over the years, because then we had him on Mountain Stage, and then he became part of the West Virginia Music Hall of Fame. He was one of the first inductees, rightfully so. Told me a lot of stories, and later I read his autobiography, which then told me more stories about his connection with Lieber and Stoller. And it's pretty interesting. The great songwriters who wrote a million hits for a million people. He became friends with them because he was like a hillbilly country guy in New York City, singing folk music and stuff. Just went to see them and said, can you help me? And they kind of liked him because he was so bold to come and ask, you know, Lieber and Stoller, can you help me write songs? And they listened to his songs. They said, look, you're a good songwriter, but we're in for hit songs. We want hit songs. This is not hit songs. This is folk songs. They said, if you have something, send it back to me. Finally, he said he kept sending stuff to them. They said, no. And then they hit one. And then later he told me that when he wrote Jackson, that song, he took it to, I think it was Jerry Lieber, and said, what do you think of this? And he had like 12 verses. And the guy who's looking at it, he said, this is pretty interesting. He said, okay, but get rid of the first five verses and start off with, we got married in a fever. And Billy Ed said, okay. And things worked out pretty well. The thing that's really the most touching and most moving and means the most to me was that the West Virginia Music Hall of Fame put out a record of all Billy Ed Wheeler songs done by many different people. And there's plenty of songs. So Bob Thompson on piano and me singing got to do Coming of the Roads, which was such a touching, beautiful song I heard when I first came to West Virginia. And the longer I stayed here, the more I understood what that song was about. It was obvious in the beginning, but it even goes deeper, you know, when the roads came in so that they could make the mines and take out the lumber, everything changed.
Did you keep in touch with him?
I kept in touch with him a little bit. The most best fan letter I ever got was him writing to me, telling me he liked my version of Coming of the Roads. To me, that was it. I mean, that was because I listened to this guy when I was 12 years old or 13 years old, and he wrote me and said, I did a wonderful job on Coming of the Roads. And I thought, I'm going to keep this email forever. You know, I may print it and put it on the wall because it's the best review I ever got.
Artists, sometimes you think about their legacies. What do you think is Billy Ed's?
Well, Billy Ed was a natural. He definitely wanted to be successful. In some ways, he reminds me of Louise McNeil, who I worked with, the poet laureate of West Virginia, and I'll tell you why. Because even though she was a natural and she was almost like grew out of the ground in West Virginia, she really wanted to be successful in a popular way. And she was happy when one of her poems was published in Life magazine and she got money for it. And people would think, that's commercial, and, you know, no, she thought that was great. And Billy Ed the same way. Of course, he wanted to have hits, but he also had the ability to write these songs like High Flying Bird, like, you know, Red Wing Blackbird, which, like, they communicate so much about a way of life.
The Boone's Farm, do you recall what flavor it was?
I don't. I didn't know. I didn't drink at the time, and I didn't even know the difference between, I think it was red.
Larry, thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
That was Mountain Stage founder Larry Gross speaking with Inside Appalachia's Bill Lynch about West Virginia native and Music Hall of Fame member Billy Ed Wheeler. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University and Marshall University School of Journalism and Mass Communications. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Keelan Bailey, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Liz McCormick, Maria Young, and Randy Yowie. Maria Young produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.